Blog Talk Radio. welcome to Into the Darkness. I am Pam Ray. I am a poet on All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the website or the group to call in, to listen, to share, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, tonight is our Dark Poetry Night. It is also an after midnight show, which means while we do not allow for smut, porn, or overly graphic violence, we do allow for a bit more adult language and content. If neither of those are your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have up to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, when you get a chance, go to Amazon.com and check out the anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. All right, now for tonight's show, we have some carryovers. We have carryovers from our last dark show, which was a poem prompt by the title of The Witch's Babies, or Witch Babies. And then we also have some carryovers from another show, but they fit in with the dark show. And there's a couple carryovers from a show that featured Dante's Inferno, and that was Richard Wiseman's show, In Our Craft, Our Solemn Art. And then I ran a contest for this show also, where as prompts, we had about, I think, 4 short films by David Lynch, who is well known for his dark work and also surrealism in his cinematography. He is, most people know him by to do with Twin Peaks, the TV show that was years ago, and I think they actually have a remake of it out now. I haven't seen the remake. I don't even know if he's involved with it, to be honest. That's how out of touch I am with up-to-date things. But the movies that, they are considered movies, but they're short films. Like, the prompts we had in the contest were honestly probably all under 5 minutes. There was Observed Encounter with Fear. There was The Alphabet, which I found particularly creepy. But there is something about when you take some dark surrealism and mix it in with the children singing the alphabet, it becomes rather eerie. There was also 6 Figures Getting Sick and Blue Green. Now, I'm sure anyone who is a David Lynch fan has probably already seen these. And if you have not seen them, I highly recommend giving them a watch, as they are absolutely just eerie and intriguing all the way through. So, and definitely will not take up too much of your time. Most of us can easily watch YouTube or something for probably hours, especially when we find something that interests us. And all right, getting back to the page I want to get back to. All right, let me think. Anything else? I've mentioned anthologies. I mentioned tonight's topic. And I guess I can go ahead and get us started. So, all right. I should also check my studio because, well, you never know. By this point, I might have company. And if not, well, you'll just be listening to me and what I have to say. All right. No company yet. Hopefully soon. All right. So, going to go to Late Night Poets, put in the first poem, which will be a carryover from In Our Craft, Our Solemn Art, Dante's Inferno. And this is Weeping Windows by Greg Gall. And giving it a second to open up. It goes like this. Our eyes may be the windows of the soul. Through my windows, I see all the sorrows, where sorrows, tears always take a toll, hoping to improve everyone's tomorrows. My fortress built as a face to the world reveals that fair is foul and foul is fair, discerning what is just and unfurled, that can we ever see the real truth out there? Bound by my fears and tears, I sadly weep. Is something within solemnly seething? In my soulful refuge, I murder sleep, like widows in back of a church fretting. From my perch, my judgments are on the brink. Now I see the slanted ways people think. In poem. Well, that was a really nice sonnet. At least, I believe it was a sonnet. I haven't counted the syllable count, but it looks like to be approximately 10 syllables per line. The rhyme pattern fits. It has the three four-line stanzas and then the ending couplet. And like so many styles of sonnets, it does touch on social issues. Well, I shouldn't say what they all do. Oftentimes some touch on love, some touch on social issues, and they all kind of have, as far as I can remember about the technical form of sonnets, is that they all have basically how it's put is that the first approximately two stanzas, I believe, or maybe even three, are the question, the seeking of the answer, and the last couple lines provides that turn that gives you the answer. Now, what I like about this is that he starts out with something that we've all been told over and over again. The eyes are the windows to the souls. And, you know, sometimes though, those windows, they get a little dirty. You just can't see everything that's there with some people. And honestly, in society today, people, they twist the truth into the lies and the lies into the truth until your head is just spinning around. And, you know, I really like, you know, well, the thing I like this all the way through, and I do have to say that I think Greg is just a wonderful rhyming poet, is that I like the idea that all of a sudden when you see from my perch, my judgments are on the brink, you think, now maybe this is the pastor of a church, and he's looking down at everybody, and he's judging everybody else, and then he realizes that his judgment's off, and maybe the windows, you know, his own soul isn't as clean as he thought it was. But anyways, it's a wonderful thought-provoking write, and hey, Rex, welcome. Glad you could join me.
Thanks.
Good to have you here. And did you get a chance to hear or to read Greg Gull's poem?
Yep. There's, I was going to say bitterness, but that doesn't walk that way. This walks as someone who actually has deemed themselves worthy of a position where they are judge, jury, and executioner all rolled into one. From my perch, my judgments are on the brink. Now I see the slanted ways people think, but he doesn't offer up the fact that he is making that judgment call as opposed to, a 12 good and true. And when one person makes the judgment, when it goes to a singularity, they're raising themselves to God status. And he kind of hits that thought. My fortress built as a face to the world reveals that fair is foul and foul is fair. And then he hits on that thought, murder, sleep. Both of those phrases are, I think, like that. And then he offers up the tone of why he's doing what he's doing as that God. Bound by my fears and tears, I sadly weep. Is something within sullenly seething. And there's the turn right in that phrase right there. Is something within suddenly sullenly heathen, and he's offering up a little bit of angst in the moment, but still takes on the thought of judging in the moment, bar none.
I can definitely say, and you're right. I think absolutely there is that turn there, and it's taking on that judging in the moment. So, excellent comment. And I like that picture that he put with the poem. That's kind of cool. All right. Now, where am I going? I know where I'm going. The fire just doesn't know. All right, let's try this again. So, did you have a good day today?
Yeah.
Anybody play any April Fool's tricks on you?
Only what I'm looking up now in the pig Latin.
Oh, okay. Well, there is actually a link. Here, first I'm going to post the link to the poem, and then give me a moment, because Dee Navarro posted this link that all you have to do is click on the link, and it gets rid of the pig Latin. So I'm going to read so you can see it, and when you get a chance, click on that, and you won't have to deal with the pig Latin. So, all right. So there's that link. When you want to, you can click on that. And then the next poem up is The End Is Near by JEG325. And Rex, go ahead, please, and give that a read for us.
The End Is Near by JEG325. Life has abandoned the sky. Only darkness remains in the shadows. Unknown creatures scurry to and fro. Shrinking deep within itself, the world slowly expires. Some hang on fiercely because they refuse to let go. In the time before, elders say the sun shone brightly, but wars ravaged the planet, fragmenting humanity. Life reverted back to a constant struggle for survival. Only dead escaped what fighting brought to be. Now survivors huddle, cowering behind stone walls, afraid to make a sound lest the stalkers snatch them. There are fates worse than being killed in cold blood. You could become part of the soul seeker's mayhem. Day brings no comfort, just a different shade of gray, helping life to dwindle away in an unceasing march. Don't sing about yesterday has withered and died. Don't sing about tomorrow either, or hope has lied. Go to sleep. It's best you do not wake. Better this than to leave your soul for the stalkers to take. With your last words, pray that the end is near. And Paul.
Great read there, Rex. I really like this. It's a wonderful rhyming poem. It's an epic tale. I like that it has that, it's one of those apocalyptic type stories. And there's always, to me, certain classical elements in these types of stories. There's the whole idea of a society, you know, falling apart morally and socially. There's always there's always seems to be some sort of like leader, elders that teach a way or try to teach a way that used to be, and those who cling to the old ways and those who try to move forward. And I particularly like there are fates worse than being killed in cold blood. You could become part of the soul seeker's mayhem. It also, it's that whole idea of, to me, of just when life is offered up as almost too perfect, and then there's that, but behind it all is that dark, behind the veil is that darkness, and you know that it's that wrong choice that will lead you into something worse than death. I really find it particularly haunting with the closing to the end where it says, go to sleep, it's best you do not awake. Better this than to leave your soul for the stalkers to take. I like how it's almost like the idea of zombies, except for instead of eating brains, they pretty much take away what gives you your sense of human decency and it makes you an individual. So excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, I like the pick. It's a nice thought to throw up besides the voice that you've written underneath, because it walks that fine line, because that's a pretty dark and disturbing picture, and it does reek of a very dystopian universe to behold. And the thought kind of walks along the same lines as Dante, but it kind of takes that thought out of 1984, 100 years later, where the thought with everything, the thought police and everybody else has died, and it's rolled itself into this really eerie place where now it's a matter of everything that went on within that world is now exemplified to the point where you've got soul takers, death dealers, so to speak, except they don't care how they get it. They just want it. It's become part of the new norm. And he wrote this straight up, except for that fourth stanza. Then he gets into a little offset rhyming. From that first line, just a different shade of gray, and then into the half line in the next one, dwindle away, then to yesterday, and then on down to awake to finish out with take, and then pray off it up as the finality in that run. I like that book. It just kind of add a nice little tone of touch to it.
It does. It really does. The whole idea of trying to, and that really, you're right, it does fit really well with both Dante's Inferno and 1984 in the message behind the darkness. So excellent comment there. And, sorry. All right. Should we make longer comments? Well, let's see how things go. If nothing else, I'll send you for a poem. All right. So, One Bright Day by Pam Eight. And it goes like this. Oh, yeah. And this is from the Witch's Babies. It goes like this. One bright day in the middle of the night, two dead boys began to fight. Back to back, they faced each other, drew their swords, and shot each other. If you don't believe what I'm telling you to be true, just ask the blind woman, for she saw it too. Blind sage sees more than not. She knows which souls are clean, which ones have rot. If she says she saw, she would not be wrong. You'd have to be able to hear her in a different way, though for a birth, they cut out my tongue. End poem. Very cool. I do like how she, I don't know if you remember that poem from your childhood, Rex, or any point in your life, but that the first couple stanzas, was a classic poem that people used to read, although nobody can pinpoint where it came from. But I remember singing that as a child, and I really liked the way she led in. Like, she started with that poem and then added on to it with her own thoughts. So very cool there. But before I say more, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
It walks back on itself. There's a nice contradictory note to it. Two dead boys began to fight. Drew their swords, they shot each other. Just ask the blind woman, she saw it too. I mean, it's got the, it's darkly humorous. Sardonic. Which souls are clean, which ones have rot. A nice turn. You can see that with someone who actually sees within, I guess. But and then the thought, the last line, she's telling her story, but she doesn't have a tongue, so how is she uttering the tale to begin with?
That is a good question. And you're right, there's like plenty of contradictory things in here, which I think makes, as you mentioned, wonderful dark humor. I think maybe part of this is the whole idea of see people who like you mentioned, see in a different way, speak in a different way, hear in a different way. And maybe the whole idea here is that inside her head, she's telling this story, but she knows that the person she's telling it to doesn't actually hear in the way that you know, people who have certain powers can hear. I like that she took that classic poem within the first couple, which is reminiscence of childhood, and then added on to it, and added into it the blind woman, the blind sage sees more than not. She knows which souls are clean, which ones have not. And I like that because it really, it focuses on the idea that there are people who have that ability to tell what someone is like on the inside, if they are rotting away at the inside or if there's a pureness there. And it was an interesting twist at the end with the, "For at birth they cut out my tongue." And the other thing I like about that ending is it's kind of one of those endings that leaves you hanging because you want to know who cut out the tongue and why did they do it? You know, like this is one of those poems where it stands well on its own, but you could also add more in a second part just to find out some of those little extra details. So, excellent write and very well done. All right. So, yeah, did you get a chance to click on that link so that it shows up on English first?
Yeah.
Okay. Up next is "Be Careful What You Wish For" by Rooster Cogburn. And Rex, go ahead, give that a read for us, please.
"Be Careful What You Wish For" by Rooster Cogburn. Two nubile nuns on bus receded, ha ha ha, journeyed together convent bound, abruptly approached, molested, ho ho ho, by punk rocker, their dirty hound. I love to sort you two gals out, ho ho ho, introduce share carnal knowledge, for I'm Jack the Lad about town, ha ha ha, into threesomes, dogging, bondage. Hey hey hey, be off, lewd lustful man, wanting laid, mysterious voice, bus conductors, rallying call his surmise? Nay, 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 as two demure nuns quietly prayed. Alighting from bus, again the voice in punk rocker's ear imparted. At 10 each night, the cemetery on Holy Ghost, two nubile nuns awaked. Ho, 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 ha, 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 ooh, la, la. If I were you, I'd make that date. True to form, covered by sheet white, punk rocker his presence stated. Ho, 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 I'm the Holy Ghost. Nuns nubile, it's your lucky night. Two hearts uplifted, ha, 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 replied, for 10 long years we've waited. Further to corrupt, no coitus interrupt, disguised punk rocker sodomized, two veiled nuns and cast off sheet, ha, 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 I'm no Holy Ghost, at which nun, both nuns their veils let down, ho, 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 and we're not nuns, but two plague-infested zombies revived to quell a dirty hound. Ampong.
Well, I would say that plague-infested zombies would definitely quell a dirty hound. But I really like how your voice is perfect for adding in those extra ha 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 and ho ho ho's. Like that was a wonderful read. And this is clever. I do like how he kind of. He took the kind of idea of the prompt poem, and he added in the laughter, the ha-has, and the ho-hos, but he really put it in a different context, you know, very more modern day with the writing on the back of the bus, the nuns, the punk rocker. I thought it was a nice touch that he added, "I'm Jack, the lad about town." Then of course, something was going to happen. Whenever somebody invites you to a cemetery to get laid, something's going to happen. So that was a clever twist on the poem at the end. There's definitely some very dark, twisted humor, and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's a biting thought to religion, two nubile nuns, and he doffs himself up as the Holy Ghost, but that wasn't the original thought as it came out. A lining from Bus, again, the voice in punk rock's ear imparted, "At 10 each night, the cemetery on Holy Ghost, two nubiles await." Kind of runs that thought, the cemetery on Holy Ghost. Well, the thought there is the street named Holy Ghost, and that's where the cemetery is? Okay. And then he decides to dress, I'm going to be the Holy Ghost on Holy Ghost. So, and that thought, buggering two plague-infested zombies. You know what? That's so much for punk rocking. or maybe that's the general idea. Punk rockers, bugger in plague-infested zombies. And they don't mind.
That could easily be. I guess it would probably depend on the punk rocker. Some of them might be all for it, and, some of them might back up a little bit. That would be quite a sight there. And I think you're right, it does kind of have a little bit of a biting look at religion and what people will fall for being the Holy Ghost, and on the reverse side, what people will fall for when offered up temptations. So, excellent, right? Great comment there, Rex.
It's a bleeding cemetery. Always going to be in there for it, jumping bones anyway.
Right? No kidding. Next time, get a hotel. But at least with cemeteries, you don't have to worry about bed bugs. And, all right. Up next is Turn to Stone by Eliza B. G. Lucas. And as soon as I get this open up, it goes like this. "In the darkness, witches turn to stone. Hard as nails, like a dog with a bone. Two mothers hold the child's hand. The child has grown tall as she stands. A shock of light brightens the dorm, darkening Haiti in vertical form. Clothing is stained with blood, I surmise. Perhaps I'm wrong, it's just a surprise. Faces black, dark, no features in sight. Mothers comfort child's light, a nightmare to frighten in the middle of the night, leaving alone the crying child, long may she grow to a decent height." End poem. All right, and Rex, your thoughts?
Well, witches turn to stone, and then two mothers hold the child's hand. There's that thought of in the first stanza that hits on a note of turn of walking the dark angle of things, and then hits on again the light, but it also walks dark in that second stanza. Blood, I surmise, perhaps I'm wrong, it's just a surprise. This kind of walks as a Halloween type tale, but also that last stanza walks back itself to the front stanza. Face of black, dark, no features in sight, mother's comforts, child's plight. A nightmare to frighten in the middle of the night, leaving alone the crying child. Long may she grow to a decent height, which walks right back to the the very first stanza, and she in turn becomes that witch because she was raised by the witches, so she walks the same value in light and darkness and rears her child the way she was reared.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, it does. You're right. There's that kind of thought of, you know, how a child is raised. And it does. It's interesting how there's a story in here with only, like, what is it, like 12 lines approximately. It's not really a particularly long poem, and yet there is definitely a story in here. It reminds me of a book I read. There was this person who it was a spin-off of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, but it was told from the perspective of women. Like, all the main characters were women, and part of the story was that there was a lot of occultic stuff. There was kind of this whole idea of being taught, you know, your witch powers. And it's been so many, like, honestly, it's been like a couple decades since I've read it. It's hard for me to describe it, but it really was a fascinating book, and that's what this kind of reminds me of. But, you know, it also, though, well, it does make me think about, like, what you were saying, the whole idea of a storyline where somebody is raised by witches and then turns around and raises their child in a different way. It also becomes that last one, a nightmare to frighten in the middle of the night, leaving alone the child, crying child, long may she grow to a decent height. It just, there's almost an impact of reality there. Like all of a sudden, maybe it just becomes about a child who's having a nightmare and a parent's choice of whether or not, you know, how to, like, do you let the child sleep with you in the bed? Do you let the child cry it out? There's almost, like, I feel like there's a story, but then there's also kind of a dab of reality as far as how do we as parents, you know, handle those nighttime moments of parenting and the struggles of the young mind that's dealing with an overactive imagination. Very, very cool, right? I enjoy that. And, all right. So, those were our carryovers, and now we are going into the rights from the current contest, and we do have a couple of SoundClouds, so we'll give our voices a break and play those. Let's see. Rex, now are you, did you used to watch Twin Peaks or any of David Lynch's movies?
Yeah, I've done Twin Peaks. That was a fascinating look behind Bizarre.
Yes, I have to agree. Bizarre and fascinating was definitely. It's been so long, though, that since I've watched it that I barely remembered, other than thinking that it was extremely unique. You know, one that I also liked but didn't really have anything to do, obviously, with David Lynch was I liked The X-Files at first, but then I got tired of it. Like, it just seemed to be eventually the same thing over and over again.
Well, that's because most of it walks on a singular timeline, which is the sister and alien abduction. So everything eventually returns on that note somewhere down the line.
That's true. That's true. That's a really good point. Yeah, I think the other thing was, though, is like there was, who was it, the one that Sully, the female one, who didn't believe in all that kind of stuff? Yes, yeah, and she would, on the show, this character would see all this different stuff. By the end of that episode, by the end of the next episode, it'd be like, I don't believe in this kind of thing. How do you see that much stuff? I mean, I don't know. They're just certain, you know.
Well,
I shouldn't be overly
she good. Was only... Let me see. She was 25 when she was recruited as an FBI member, and she was taken on to be the foil to Mulder. She She was the one that was pragmatic and born in science, and she was there to debunk all his ideas, thoughts, and put the truth out as far as, well, not the truth, but put out a more of an FBI thought to the paperwork that was going to the higher-ups. And she saw way too many things, so stuff she couldn't offer up any scientific modus operandi for. So she eventually started walking on the other side because she had nowhere else to go because of what she'd seen.
That makes, okay. I guess I had missed that, or it's just been too many years that I didn't remember. That definitely makes more sense. Very cool. But yeah, that was a good show. And so was Twin Peaks. I could keep going on about shows that I think are great, but we better continue and focus on the path at hand. All right, so up next is A Day in the Mind, Five Ideas Dissected in a Vignette by Rob Cohen. And we'll be on over to the studio and find that. And all right, here we go.
A Day in the Mind, Five Ideas Dissected in a Vignette. The Singer on the Train track record is number one in my book, while I am zero. I am the sheep with a bruised blossom bus ticket, busking knee-deep on Highway 61. I am the pensioner wearing musky deodorant spray, playing crossword puzzles on blue fold-up pages of recycle bin salvaged papers. I am the water lily, cut with culinary scissors, sold on the street corner where the coroner's daughter orders her fish and chips parcels. I am the bingo card with 13-odd numbers never called in the dusty dartboard dance hall of the Red Town Square. I am the rusty harmonica blowing Memphis anthems in an overcoat wind with whistles, stabbing thistle songs. I'm the red raincoat never worn outside Chelsea Hotel, soaked and forgotten without devotion of a poet's song. I'm the Baptist fasting with locusts in harsh winter rivers, waiting for a cousin under pelting stones with my head on a platter. I'm the seal starved of oysters in surrealist poems and psychedelic beetle eggmen sing-songs. I am the leper crawling along cobblestone pavements, begging for the kingdom's token in sunstroke delirium. The blue 2D pencil-sketched man lies with his skinny paintbrush hands chained to bedposts and scrawny inkpot legs tied to tussles of dark mustard and oak-colored Arabian rugs. The belly of this graphite-created graphic drawn in dog-eared comic book outline, half-tattered, the other half plastered with seashells and baked root vegetables. Grey scales of cat-and-mouse hopscotch fill the space between his neck and face, in jaw-dropping jazz beats blown in a trombone maze, halting the toe-tapping, tiger-strapped finger-click race. Old man at twilight, and the tonsillitis has suffered impressionist portraits, with blurred, half-blind eyes, as Catalonia sparkles behind the Raphael-worn, stretched ostrich neck. Stern curled upper lip, an ebony iris, the tobacco pipe clutched tight in his left hand, is shaded by soft copper portraits of a window-leaning sister. A neorealistic lady sprawled out on the rocky beach, displaying geometric diagrams and golden ratio intersections. In a Virginia garden with fountains and flowers, a scaffolding tower held his easel, while his canvas draped over the sky. Bird choreographer shot his backdrops on film, cutting eyes out of cardboard, as surrealism was realized on reel. Sheepishly, the winter needs possum breath held tight in silk-woven sacks. We sit in silence watching the scene unraveling apple seeds seamlessly, as bullet-shaped pools breathe dust to air and nightmares disappear under thin wisps. Saharan palm tree pages laced with a guitar of secrets, an unveiled wizard gift of ribbons and tied at your feet, as camels bow on ivory padded knees, the glimmer of gold horseshoes striking light in desert heat, skipping through Soviet nursery factories on hums of laughter and checkered shrieks. Green and blue plug their fingers too, zap them, I zap them, their chests went poof. Gas pipes drip onto white-dressed mystery, pooling under scout socks and tightly laced military boots, where a sunhat cloaks the beige-green rucksack, smack-bang in the middle of my Polish panic attack. Ring-a-ring electricity, pocket filthy and bloody, shocked them, I shocked them, their heads went boom. Film reel unwinding, the wheel spinning tapes, an auburn-haired patient staggers through puddles. Doctors lie twisted, rotting in a blood flood.
Great reading right there, Ralph. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is much appreciated. And Rex, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Well, you've taken those film clips and wove a storyline in it that kind of hits on surreality, but my first thought was the way he did all this, it kind of, Jim Morrison did a, when he was in film school, he did a short film as part of his class grade. And he got, actually, I think he failed. They didn't like it. And it was kind of surrealistic, which is my guess is he would have enjoyed this one as a thought to surrealism and short clips that he would have viewed. Then read this out, and bam, there's a whole lot of language in here that works well from that. I am, I particularly like that first one. I am the sheep with the Bruce Blossom bus ticket, busking knee deep on Highway 61. There's a nice ease of thought there too. And then the pensioner, the water lily, the bingo card, the rusty harmonica. There is that note to anything and everything. I am one and all in the moment. And that second part kind of hits on the black and white nature of things, the 2D pencil sketch, the belly of the graphite, and the graphic drawn in dog-eared comic book outline, half tattered, the other half plastic with seashells and baked root vegetables. It hits on the grayness of living outdoors, so to speak. Because you hit on that, where was that? Missed it. Oh, no, maybe it was the second one. Next one down. Oh, now I can't find it. Damn. Well, anyway, he's got some, each section hits on a surrealistic imagery which really draws you in. I like the thoughts that he's got written down. The language is great. And then he hits on, near the end, he hits on sheepishly goes, so it goes back to the sheep thought, but this one, sheepishly, the winter needs possum breath held tight in silk woven sacks. That's a hell of a thought. And this is Saharan palm tree pages, another nice, so it goes from winter out in the desert thought there as a nice big turnaround. And then the thought in zapping and boom, the thought is actually using this as such a picture to immobilize, capture, and captivate that it blows their minds because nobody can figure out exactly what he's offering up as a thought, but they all work together.
Absolutely, absolutely. But isn't that kind of the whole idea of a vignette is separate thoughts that work together, if I remember right?
Oh, yeah. The offering at the very last, the stanza, the three lines there. Film reel unwinding the wheel spinning tapes. An auburn-haired patient staggers through puddles where doctors lie twisted, rotting in blood flood. And there's a wonderful thought to kind of finish out on, especially with the film reel, because that's what he's offering up with this. It's kind of like he's taking all these individual prompts, offered up the thoughts within them, and painted them as a movie stitched together. instead of 5 minutes piece, he's taken them all and dropped it into a 30 or a 40 minute piece.
Right, where just one thing happens after another rather than the separate, like you said, the separate 5 minute movies. With that whole film reel unwinding, you can just hear the flap, flap, flap. Like I remember that my grandparents had one of those projector things, and you get to the end and it would make that slapping noise. But you're right. First of all, I have to say I'm impressed that Rob took on all the prompts and wove them together into one right. Plus, as he says in the end, took on some that weren't even mentioned as prompts. I believe you touched on the how this talks about some of the very darker side of humanity. I really like how he chose to lowercase all his I's, which I know some poets do choose to do that, but I have to say I don't think I see Rob do that all the time. So I feel like there's a kind of an importance here as the whole idea that, like, a lot of these stanzas, I feel, are jumping from one character to the next, and the lowercase I's kind of indicate that neither character is more important than the other. Let's see. Oh, my goodness. You have so many great lines. I am the sheep with a bruised blossom bus ticket, busking knee-deep on Highway 61. And, of course, you think of a sheep being the follower, I am the water lily cut with culinary scissors, sold on the street corner where the coroner's daughter orders her fish and chips parcels. I find that where the coroner's daughter orders her fish and chips parcels. That's extremely dark. I don't know why, but it just kind of makes me think of the selling of body parts. Let's see. I have to say, and you might have already brought it up, but I didn't hear you bring it up, is that I thought you'd immediately would be attracted to the I Am the Seal starved of voicers and surrealist poems and psychedelic Beatle Eggman sing songs. Bringing the surrealism of the Beatles into that I thought was really cool. The blue 2D pencil-sketched man lies with his skinny paintbrush hands chained to bedposts and scrawny ink pot legs tied to the tussles of dark mustard and oak-colored Arabian rug. For that stanza particularly, there are certain other stanzas, but particularly for that stanza, you kind of get that feeling of being trapped by your own obsessions. Like, whatever it is your obsession is, it takes over your life. Grayscale, a cat and mouse hopscotch, fill the space between his neck and jaw-dropping jazz, the flowing trombone maze. I think that stanza particularly, and I'm probably wrong, but that one kind of has the eeriness of the alphabet. Did you get a chance to watch The Alphabet by David Lynch?
No.
I highly recommend it. I recommend you watch all of them, but that one is particularly creepy because you have this woman in bed blindfolded, and she just, it's almost like as if she's woken up from a nightmare, and you get all these flashes of these surrealistic images, and then really the only sounds in the movie, in the short film, is these children singing the alphabet and then this kind of static-type noise. I'm going to just comment on one more. I mean, I think I could comment for every individual one, but I won't. It's the one that starts with, I am the leper crawling along cobblestone pavements, begging for the kingdom's token in sunstroke delirium. That whole idea of that people who act coy and reject those who they don't see as holy, and that kind of begging for a forgiveness that is not ever fully given. Absolutely, it's just an intriguing rite all the way through, and very well done. I definitely think he nailed the prompt. Yeah, if you ever get a chance to, I highly recommend watching some of David Lynch's short films because they're really fascinating. Yeah. All right, what was I going to grab next? I think I might have already grabbed Mamyon, but yes, I did. All right, then I'm going to get back to Late Night Poet. And... put that in there. All right. So for this one, we have a SoundCloud also. It is Mentula Aberrant by Mamia and Mosey on Over. And here we go.
Mentula Aberrant, ashen-faced, staggering, lust-driven, muttering, grayscale against brown dress, fear-etched deep, sexually harassed, dread swallows, antagonist whole, Mentula Aberrant, empty glory hole, horror ensues, faint of heart, fear consumes, fall apart.
Thank you, Mamia, for that. SoundCloud is very much appreciated. Wonderful read. And Rex, your thoughts?
Let's see. He's got that opening. Ashen face, staggering, lust driven, muttering. So that comes right up as a stalker, and she hits on sexual harassment in the second one, and then Dread Swallows, antagonist whole, Mentula Aberrant, empty glory hole, kind of empty brain, and the horror ensues, faint apart, fear consumes, fall apart. There's fear. It might just be paranoid, or it walks from the angle of that's already happened, so the fear is now ever-present. One that can't be let go of because it already has happened. So it's something always on the mind. The Mentula Aberrant, I haven't looked it up yet, but I got to figure that with that second word, it's called an aberrant mind, where the mind is dipped into the other side of the stopgap, and it cannot get past that which has already happened. So it continues walking that same role and this constant fear.
You know what? I am kind of kicking myself that I didn't look that up. You know, that would have actually been nice to know and probably added more to the poem. Although the poem itself is excellent. And let's see. Mentula is a diminutive of men's minds, or menta, mint stalk. Other sources see as coming ultimately from Peru-Indio. All right, so it has something to do with men's minds. Ah. Oh, okay. It has to do with, never mind. Let's see here. I think it might have something to do with another part of the word. Oh, okay. It's a penis. Somebody who's thinking with the wrong head. I don't know what aberrant means, so you can look that up. And, I like how you touched a little bit on each stanza. The poem she's writing to, it was a really intriguing short film, and it was called Absurd Encounter with Fear. And the whole basic idea is you get this idea that there's this woman along the field and this man was going up to sexually harass her, and then all of a sudden he just screams and falls down, like just basically either unconscious or dead. What I think particularly, like, you know, you get that imagery within the first four lines. And what I really like is that she puts these in like such short, impactful lines, like lust-driven. Like you know that there's nothing else driving this person forward than a physical need to control. I also like that she put in the phrase grayscale. I feel like that's really important in the idea that this person doesn't see a black and white. There isn't a right and wrong. There is like that whole idea of what I'm doing is acceptable. It's within the grayscale. And you know, you don't know the person's reasons why, but that's kind of what I get from that phrase. Horror ensues, faint of heart, fear consumes, fall apart. Now that, I have to say, that is there's some really nice rhyme in here, but especially in that ending stanza. I really like how she talks, she writes about the subject of sexual harassment without using any language that is offensive. You know, it's like, you know, she really has a straightforward point that she makes with some wonderful layered imagery within short lines. So excellent write and very well done. Did you get a chance to look up Aberrant?
Metamorphosis. So I guess it's the aberrant or the metamorphosis of changing of the penile mind. It kind of walks, the mentula probably derives from the same thing as men's in regard to Latin, because mentula only comes out as a singularity. It doesn't come, it comes out as wishnary. It doesn't come out from the dictionary itself.
Oh, I like that thought. Very cool. Very cool. Thank you. Made a good point there. All right. So, let's see. I need some time. All right. Now, this next poem is a short one, so I'm going to have you read it, and then I'm going to have you go straight into commenting. That's because I need a couple minutes. All right. I will comment when I get back. Next up is Flintschmob by Anton Ansford.
Flintschmob by Anton Ansford. The first Lynch film I saw featured the secret life of Henry, father to a strange creature, a world of terrible noise and unspeakable growth. World to which I would frequently return, where my doppelganger, secret self, speak back and forth the good and good and evil, both were mass dedicated to the fire and palm. Okay. This kind of walks that same line of, what the hell was it? Twin Peaks. A little oddball, that good and evil. Both wear masks dedicated to fire. Fire was that epic. I walk with fire. Was part of that epic thought going through Twin Peaks, which was cool. And the doppelganger, the double, is a sort of offering up the other side, evil, your evil half and your good half, and the evil half. You blame that on your doppelganger. Yeah, there's somebody who looks like me, but the unfortunate truth is that doppelganger is you, but you let it out of the bag. That Jekyll and Hyde moment where the doppelganger, the other bad side walks out and Hyde takes over and runs amok. Terrible noise makes people gross. That all I got, considering it is very, very short. Secret cell speak back and forth. Secret cells. Secret desires, that which walks within itself, or that which comes with hallucinations and the twisted thoughts of a mind breaking down on itself. All right, Pam, it's your turn. And you ain't back. What?
Well, I did hear the last, yes, I'm here. I did hear the last part of your comment, and I like the idea of a twisted mind turning in on itself. You know, and the way this writing, well, first of all, clever title there, Lynch Mob. I thought that very cool there. The first Lynch film I saw featured The Secret Life of Henry, Father to a Strange Creature. I saw that movie, and I thought about using it as a prompt, but I really wanted to limit it. So I thought that was cool that he brought up that personal touch there. You know, the interesting thing, and what makes me think that you're very right about this, is that the whole idea of a mind turning in on itself is the fact that this felon, you know, like, it gets different. Like, it just, all of a sudden, it's like everything spelled out exactly how you think it should be spelled out. And then there's no R, there's no N on return. Which makes you think maybe the missing R and the missing N is the missing nurse, you know, with R standing for nurse. I know I'm grasping for straws there, but, you know, it's a thought. And let's see, doppelganger, you know, I think that's a play on words, too, in the whole idea that it's a gang, not necessarily an actual physical gang, but as if different parts of the body as well as the mind is going in. Now, what I find interesting, let's see, both good and evil both wear masks dedicated to the fire. So there is no really no good, no evil per se, because they're both wearing masks and they're both dedicated to the same thing, maybe for different purposes, but in the end they're both going to throw you to the fire. But now, what do you think, Rex, of the fact that evil is spelled without an L and two I's? Do you think there's some meaning behind that? And if so, what do you think it is?
E7, if that doesn't offer me up anything. Well, a doppelganger, too, is spelled without an R to finish it off as doppelganger. And the creature is spelled as creature.
Huh.
So maybe it's just the language because of the person itself.
That could be. That could be.
I do remember this in the... In Twin Peaks, when the midget is out and about, he's always talking in offset language. They speed up the voice and slow it down, so it comes. You still got the manly end of it, but the twisted language still comes out as though he's talking with a really, really, really heavy Norlings accent.
You know what? You might be right. It might be a reflection of the character's speech. Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. It could be something as easy as that, as the butterfly speech. Yeah, but, definitely an intriguing and thought-provoking brevity. I really appreciate that. All right, now I'm going to go ahead and grab the next poem, which I should have already had up, but I'm not on the ball tonight. All right. And up next is Overdose by Bionic. And unfortunately, tonight we do not have a recording from her, which is fine. I know people can't make recordings for every poem that they write, especially when they're so, they contribute so much to shows. But this is Overdose by Theo Onick, and it goes like this. Blue-green hopes, blue-green dose of happiness, blue-green still, blue-green dream in loneliness, cried. You made her cry, and out her tears brought back to life with all our fears. You made her dance for you, for me, brought back to life all misery. Blue-green dose, blue-green hopes of childhood lost in duties of explorations, tricks covered in rust. Blue-green hopes of misplacement ghosts covered in painkiller overdose. You made her see the better choice, the best new life you should embrace. For happiness never shall wait forever in the shade of your trade of miracles and souls. Blue-green overdose of shame, green-blue overdose of pain, destroyed the evil mind of suffering joy, half set astray, losing their way, alloyed. Miracle lost for depths of skies where no one can and will deny. Her grace, her power, her kind soul, creating her new miracle. You made her live, her life's now gone. You made her stand proud in the crowd. You made her fight for what was right. Now life is gone, her path was once, path one, to follow into abyss. Trail said to carry stones with ease of happiness with overdose for blue-green hopes and dreams and stuff to live. Her angel by her side during the pain. Blue-greens all rust in time with stuff and tears. The silence and expectancy, trimmed moments of expectancy. Blue-green hopes overdose and poem. Oh, wow, that was just some wonderful, eerie imagery. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, blue-green, she hits on that rusts eventually or over time. So the blue-green has me hitting on the sort of disassociation and then using pharmacopoeia to deal with it, and it doesn't do the job because you got blue-green dose happiness, blue-green spill, blue-green hopes, blue-green dreaming loneliness, and the sort of trying to fix one with pharmacopoeia but not understanding the underlying problem to begin with. And it might have worked for a little tricklet in time, but overall it didn't. It just led to her death because she didn't. There might have been more of the underlying, might have been the physical nature in the brain itself.
Yeah, I think you got a good point there about the nature of the brain itself. And, it's intriguing. And I have to tell you, what really threw me off is how she kept repetitively saying blue-green until she got to that one line and then flipped it to green-blue. And, I found that really intriguing. But let's see here. I really like the rhyme in this and how it has an eerie sing-song-like quality to it. And there's this, and the way it keeps saying, you made her cry and out her tears brought back to life for all our fears. You made her see the better choice, the best new life you should embrace, for happiness never shall wait. But the interesting thing to me about that is you made her, because of the whole entire poem and the tonality of it, you made her see the better choice. It's more like the whole idea of you made her see, to me anyways, you made her see the choice that was the better one for you. not necessarily for her. Let's see. Blue-green overdose of shame, green-blue overdose of pain, destroyed the evil mind of suffering joy. I like the phrase, the evil mind of suffering joy, very much kind of just speaks, well, you know, it actually kind of makes me think of the term martyr, like someone being a martyr, you know, putting themselves up there and acting like they have to be. It's also really interesting how all of a sudden, after all those few stanzas, it goes path one. But there never is a path two. So it's almost like offering someone a choice that really isn't a choice. At least that's the thought I get from it. Interesting. Very interesting. I like it. All right. Up next is Blue Green by Nan529 and Rex. Go ahead, give that a read, please.
Blue Green by Nan529. Empty warehouse, desolate, echoing, cold and chilling. Don't be misled, dear reader, this place is for the dead. Lost, tortured souls trapped within this madness. Hair bedraggled, she walks looking for her child. She screams and screams, no sound comes out. Barefoot, she wanders around the empty warehouse, searching, searching, not knowing the reason why. Endlessly, she hears from him skipping as she walks from room to room. You see, dear reader, hell has many rooms, each with their own torture, each room designed for the devil's pleasure. In a corner of one of the rooms, hides a serial killer. Turning, he hears footsteps. He lingers, knowing the footsteps were made by a child. He feels the rush. He steps forward, unable to help himself. Skipping, a young boy in blue-green outfit comes closer, enticing him. As he places his hands on the child's shoulders, the boy turns around, stares at his with demon eyes. From out of the child, the voice strains and screams, "You fool, you're in hell." He recoils in fright, no more the happy skipping child instead of a bloodthirsty demon. Demon picks him up and throws him across the room. He is unable to move. For the first time ever, laughing at him, the demon walks away, changing back into a boy. She walks into the room in front of her child. She remembers the blue-green outfit she had brought him. They stand transfixed, looking at each other. The boy will smile slowly, says to her, "Mommy, it's me. Why did you leave me?" She rushes toward him. He disappears, screaming, screaming. No sound comes out. Searching, searching. Now she can't remember why. Watching the search, the demon laughs. Torture is such a pleasure as he skips away. And fun.
Great read there, Rex. I have to say, you just have that perfect voice for doing a creepy, creepy write. Wow, she really delves into the imagery of the short film wonderful attention to detail. Let's see here. Hell has many rooms, each with their own torture, each room designed for the devil's pleasure. I like how she mentions that thought there as almost a counter thought to the biblical reference to there being many rooms in heaven, and then the whole idea of there being many rooms within hell, and each one. And I know with many mythologies and many religions, there's various like different ways that people suffer for eternity in hell based on the crime they did. And I also find it intriguing and interesting that she added in there that each room is designed for the devil's pleasure. It's not just the idea that each room is designed to cater to the person's sin, but rather what the devil himself is looking for as far as amusement or pleasure. Let's see, what else? A voice strange, it screams, "You fool, you're in hell." And I like that because I think that, to me, that's a lot like a social commentary. I mean, it works on a mythological and spiritual level, but it also works on the level of somewhat people who are very unaware of everything that's happening in life. And, of course, you know, what parent, you know, or anybody doesn't get the chills from a line like, "Mommy, it's me. Why did you leave me?" And you can tell Nan is English because she's always got little tidbits of words that she throws in show that. And, you know, the repetitiveness. Sometimes, like I always say, repetitiveness sometimes can just kill a poem. But there, especially in dark poetry, it can strengthen it with the repeatingness of screaming, screaming, searching, searching. It's almost like the whole idea is just that futile call for help, that futile call, search for an answer that will not come. So just an excellent dark write, very well done. And Rex, I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts.
Well, it's very Dante-esque, and she's offered up the demon as both the antagonist and the protagonist because it's his realm, and anything goes in his realm, and it always goes his way, even with a serial killer and a mother who just let her child go. Two very different opposites, but all walking off the same equation, the little boy. Her little boy, who became his little boy, who is now the demon protagonist and antagonist in this little tidbit.
You got a really good point there. You're right. It is. She does offer the demon up as both parts. Oh, great observation there. Did you ever read the Screwtape Letters?
No.
The guy who wrote The Lord of the Rings. A really interesting book. It's the whole book is basically these demons communicating to each other by letters. So every chapter is simply a letter written from one demon to the next. You know, talking about basically, you know, the taking over of the world or the taking over of the church. It's been a while since I've read it, but I highly recommend it. Yeah. Or if you're anything like me, you have no free time to read, but other than poetry from contests that you're judging. Okay. Come to the next poem. All right. Up next is Followed Souls by Kay Heartless, and it goes like this. Hold on, sorry. Just not opening up fast enough. All right. Fall is yellowed, eyes like pathogens, green manure skin, recovered grins, lust the dust of unused wheat fields, and I am sallow, tinged and wading in, hands above hollow, stalks my love. She squats among rusty reeds, holding her knees, and I unzip silently behind her ghost gum face, pull out all my wicked weeds. I've saved the best of these to sprinkle on her crown. She doesn't turn around, and after all my seedlings die, I too unbound our fallen souls, feel one final sundown. End poem. That was just, okay, that sends shivers up and down your spine. All right, and your thoughts, Rex.
Well, she got the title right. hallowed soul. There is a nice touch of that. And so is that opening stanza. Fall is yellow, eyes like pathogens, green manure skin, the covered grins, lust the dust of unused wheat fields. And I am sallow, tinged and waiting in hands above, hollow stalks, my love. Damn. That you can walk that another way. It's just describing the end of a growing season, which is pretty cool. She squats among rusty reeds, holding her knees. And this one, the second, is even darker than the first one. It kind of walks a very different notable path from it. Behind a ghost gum face, pull out all my wicked weeds. I'd say the best of these to sprinkle on her crown. She doesn't turn around. After all, my seedlings die. I too unbound. A fallowed soul feel one final sundown. And it also hits the thought of tilling the ground at that point in time. The end of the seed growing season.
Oh,
as well,
yeah.
As well as the obvious thought that comes as from the voice of Buffer.
Exactly. So that's very, it's very layered. Now I do apologize for not knowing, but I should look this up. What does fallow mean?
Fallow is it refers to ground and being plowed, but not ready for the next season.
Oh, right. Right. Okay. Okay.
I mean, you got there. It's like you use a certain feel for a certain period of time, and then you leave it for a couple of seasons, so it's not overused, where the earth doesn't have anything left in it to give back to the crop you're growing.
Okay, then definitely that is a perfect title there. I too unbound our valid souls. Feel one final sundown. I like that because, you know, I like the whole, right, just wonderful rhyme throughout, end rhyme, inner rhyme. And as you said, there's the obvious thought there, which very much reflects on the short film itself. And then there's the, you know, that thought of almost like an attack upon Mother Nature. I think what I really like about the ending, though, is the fact that it's both the wicked and the good will see that final sundown. It comes to everyone, and so I thought that was interesting. And I am sallow, tinged, and waiting in hands above hollow stalks, my love. I also like the phrase eyes like pathogens. Now, pathogens is a cancerous, right? Cancer-causing or disease-causing.
Pathogens are what will destroy something.
Okay. So eyes like pathogens would be like focus, somebody who's focused in on destroying something. Oh, interesting. I like that. All right. Time flies when you're having fun. So I'd like to know where everybody's hiding, Rex. If they're preparing for Easter. All right. And up next is A Dying Toast by Eminem Fan 25. And Rex, go ahead, give that a read for us, please.
A Dying Toast by Eminem Fan 25. A group of six friends meet one night to have a couple of drinks. Their monthly guys' night has arrived. They crave their beer mug's clinks. The lady who's behind the bar can clearly see these men. She has experienced firsthand their darkness deep within. It was a couple of months ago when she was walking home. They drove up to her in their car and asked why she's alone. She asked them just to let her be because she's new in town. That's when they put the car in park, got out and chased her down. When they were finished, they just laughed and watched her bleed and cry. She was depressed for several weeks and wished that she would die. They do not see her at the bar. This is the perfect time. She clocks out and goes to the swamp where hemlock she can find. She cuts it up and throws it in some salt in a bowl. The onions will help mask the taste. It's time they pay their toll. It does not take them long at all, an hour at the most. They're dying, and inside her head, she raises up a toast. And poem.
Oh, I like that one. First of all, I enjoy Eminem fans' rhyming. Always has a nice flow, a nice meter to it. Excellent read there, Rex. You know, it's just that classic tale of you know, the revenge that offered up in the form of a drink. I like how he has those details that makes you, pulls you into the scene, like the clinking of the beer mugs. And I like that it's not, he's not bringing us to the, like the poem isn't about the exact moment that the attack happened, because you know, he mentions that it was a couple months ago when she was walking home. So the whole entire poem is all about her, how she has held on to this idea of revenge for the brutality that happened against her, and you know, and how they really there's no conscious. There's no these people don't understand. It's not that they don't understand. It's like they don't care. They don't see her, and I have to say, I shouldn't smile at this part, but I find that, I don't know, there's something almost darkly humorous about the idea of throwing the hemlock into a bowl of salsa. I have to say that is actually wonderfully creative, because, I don't know, like, out of all the stories I've read that it involved revenge and poisoning, I've never thought about putting the poison in salsa. So nice creative touch there, and a well-told story, great rhyme, very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, I don't see why not. It just works itself into the cilantro, so nobody notices anything extra or ordinary, or extraordinary rather. And it does hit on a couple of thoughts. Revenge is a dish best served cold, literally, because that's what she put it in, salsa. And also hits on that thought of Socrates, instead of being drunk, although they are drinking, she's offering up the hemlock as their final motif. And it comes because the crowd ordered it, so to speak, the mob. So now the mob finds itself as the one eating out the hemlock.
Yeah, I like that. And you're right, it does touch on that thought of revenge being a dish best served cold. Good catch there. And, you know, so I think there are things in salsa that, like you said, would definitely mask the taste. Now, do you have that thing where cilantro tastes like soap?
Nope.
Okay. I was just curious. But yeah, excellent right here. Great comment, Rex. And all right. Up next is My Response to David Lynch, The Alphabet, by Pink Fairy 5, and it goes like this. Blinking, A calling all cars, annoying D, barking incessantly. Where is the C on this distorted musical scale? Bare breast in my face, I zip my mouth into woodwork. B for breast, not breasts, as there is only one here. cut away from the body, so I doubt she lived. Whoever she was, bloody business, this alphabet, comes to me often, insisting. I stay off the side streets, for they are murderer's fodder. Blinking A does not stop any cars tonight. The predators are on foot, killing P, M, O, and J. In alleys behind dumpsters, the world has gone apeshit mad. End poem. Well, that was clever. A little bit different, twisted kind of thought there. What do you think, Rex?
Let's see. Killing peanut butter, modus operandi, and jelly. That does explain the world has gone apeshit mad, yes. Boy, this is kind of dystopian and a little abstract. Blinking A calling all cars, annoying B barking excessively. I understand that one. And where's this distorted C on the musical sale? Yeah, I get that too. Blinking A, that has me. What the hell is a blinking A? I'm not quite sure what that is. The B for breasts. That middle stanza. There's only one here, so I doubt she lived. Okay. Find a loose boob? Okay. And then the repeat again in the last stanza. Blinking A does not stop any cars tonight. And I still don't get blinking A.
Well, I honestly was thinking the whole poem was kind of a dark, twisted, surrealistic look at personification of letters. Like, I know you didn't do this, but you, I mean, like, for example,
well, no,
Sesame Street.
She was specific in the opening with the D and the C on the musical say on the musical scale, right? And the D barking incessantly, obviously the dog.
Maybe A stands for asshole, and the asshole is like doing puckering up because there's farts coming out. I don't know. I'm just.
Well, no, she hit on calling all cars, so that kind of hits me on police.
Yeah, blinking A. Let's see. You know what? I don't know because, it would have to calling all cars. But it must have something to do. Okay, so if we're going to connect it with police and with the phrase calling all cars, it has to do with the radio. Whatever the radio is called, announcement? Maybe it's a blinking announcement. But, you know, because they got the CB radios and they pick up the speaker thing and push the button and speak into it and say calling all cars. So it must have to do with that. With the radio, the radio that they use to transmit the message. That's my thoughts, anyways. But I do find this very, very interesting, intriguing. It is surrealistic looking. Some very visceral imagery. The interesting thing about this, though, is that because she makes it so surrealistic and because so many of the things are represented by letters, it almost tones it down, but not so much that you don't get that it's dark. It is extremely dark. It's interesting how she gets really gory within that second stanza, especially. Oh, yeah, and, you know, she actually mentions, she does mention the blinking A a second time, doesn't she?
Yep.
So, it definitely, has an importance there. Well, hopefully Pink Fairy will let us know exactly what that means. My guess is, that it has... something to do with the radio they use, but in the cop cars, but that's just a guess. I do like, though, how she ends it with the phrase, the world has gone apeshit mad. I thought that was an excellent way to end it. Very cool. And definitely really wraps a poem up like that. Very well done. And I didn't end up cutting you off, did I? Did you have anything else you wanted to say?
Nope.
Okay. I was just making sure. All right. So now we're going to go ahead and read people that I thought might call in, but did not. So I will go grab the next poem. Let's find. What am I looking for? Ah, here we go. And all right, up next is The Darkness by Swan Song. And Rex, go ahead, do that for us, please.
The Darkness by Swan Song. My grandmother used to say that I had the devil in me because I was curious and filled an old Coke bottle up with slithering garden snakes who had just burst from an egg in the deep ditch on the side of the road in the late spring where balsam root blossomed in mustard yellow and an old tire lay in the grass. Of course, I took them inside and left them on the nightstand where they proceeded to crawl out the lip of the bottle, then wriggle across the floor. There were at least 20 black skin with yellow stripes, and the bedroom slithered with tiny snakes going all directions. She stood on a chair and shouted, "Get ye behind me, Satan," her blue eyes wide, her sturdy frame crouched on the defense. Of course, she prayed for me afterwards, putting a firm hand on my back, exercising Lucifer from my soul. I captured most of them, and the cat got a couple. I returned them to the ditch and ran to Newland's drugstore with a 10-cent bottle for a lemon-lime soda. At dinner, she spoke about demons, about how when a man, possessed man is cleansed, they will walk out in the desert and find themselves empty. Seven more demons will re-enter, and the state of the man will be worse than before. I knew the darkness even at age 10. When for no reason I caught a chicken in the coop and twisted its head off, just like my grandma did on a summer day. She said, "We're going to have chicken and dumplings," as she dipped the body of the chicken in the boiling water and pulled feathers, then cut open the bird from its cloaca to its breast, with one firm hand pulled out its guts. Only this time, there was just the head and the body of the chicken quivering in its death throes, a little rose-red blossom streaming down its neck. Then I knew the darkness was within me. I hid the body like Cain, for I was not the chicken's keeper. The dog found it and took the rap for my murder, and I kept my secret with a sinister inward grin. Once again, my grandmother prayed, speaking in her foreign tongue, consorting with angels, because the darkness inside me was strong. And poem.
Excellent read there. You know, I really like this because it's one of those stories that you can't help but wonder if it has a little touch of reality to it. Like, you know, did Jeff grow up with a very religious grandmother who raised and, you know, killed chickens? And you know, I could see him being a young boy putting slithering garden snakes in an old Coke bottle. But it definitely takes on a new layer of darkness. Like, to me, it really looks at the fact that people who grow up to be serial killers, who grow up to be psychopaths, oftentimes start with animals. And they don't have that sense of, like, there's not that sense of regret. There's a sense of having to hide the body because he knows the boy in the poem knows it's going to get him in trouble. The very vivid use of language, like specifically calling for my murder, and I kept my secret with a sinister inward grin. I also like that the reference to Cain. I hid the body like Cain, for I was not the chicken's keeper. And right there, that kind of that sense of that loss of, that knowledge, the right and wrong. And let's see. Now, he does a little bit, it's interesting because he kind of steers away, Jeff steers away from his regular, like, he does mention certain aspects of nature, like the balsam root, the mustard yellow, but he's really got a lot more, like, there's almost, and I don't want to say there's never, obviously there's always emotion in his poetry, but here it focuses more on the ugliness within the person rather than what imagery is around them. I find that just really interesting and very well done. So an excellent dark tale. And what are your thoughts, Rex?
Country living, especially with the grandma's old country, old country. As a boy, just trying to fit in and understand, because grandma's always preaching on this end, and that can be a drag at times. So, and even though he broke the chicken's neck, he watched her do it, so he didn't see anything wrong with it in the moment, except the thought that the chicken wasn't going to be ready for dinner, so there was no point to actually breaking the chicken's neck, except to find out actually can he do it. And yeah, he did do it. And as far as serial killers, they don't go for chickens. They'll do cats and dogs first.
I like that. And yeah, that makes sense. Like the grandma knows when to kill the chicken because it's dinner time. And like you said, you know, when you do it with there's no point, that's, well, obviously going to get you into a bit of trouble. So definitely well said there. And you're right, it is a good look at country life and the practicality of country life. All right. Grab the next poem, and this is Blue Green by Dabbler. And it goes like this. Blade of grass, a souring bud, stubby, rounded, youthful nub, potent sky bears down scalding light, the sickly plant sobs, missing night, stifling heat, makes limbs shrivel, yellow-white, nuclear dribble, rooted down into earth, no purchase, no rebirth, last curling succor, simpering for, absent mother, seeking shade, dark not granted, a winter bloom, in the spring misplanted, and poem. Oh, that was a nicely rhyming dark poem. I like that. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, the easy thought is the way it's written. It's about whatever it is, the grass, a souring bud, whether it's whatever you planted for the season is not doing well because you're not tending to it. And that's the general thought that works in it. But this also hits on that thought of not tending to a child. You've got that seed, you've got the child, and now, because of your carelessness, it's not growing the way it should, which hits on that spring misplanted. Maybe you should have actually put on a bloody raincoat.
Yeah, I think you're right. I also think you're right there. And it also, I have to say that it along the same thoughts, it makes me think about how so oftentimes those who would make really good parents or have the means to be a parent, you know, can't physically conceive. And then there are those that just seem to pop them out one after another, and who do so, you know, and then really don't seem to even care or want to take care of the child. You're definitely right there about the whole idea of, you know, wear that raincoat, especially if you're not going to be, if you're going to be that absent mother. Let's see. Potent sky bears down scalding light. The sickly plant sobs, missing night. Stifling heat makes limbs shrivel. It's very much all about neglect. It's the emotional abuse of neglect, of not feeling like somebody wants to take care of you. It's a wonderful, short, impactful line, great rhyme, and just a biting commentary on the whole idea of a child that's neglected. And all right, and I believe that might have been our last poem for the night. And I got to tell you, time flies when you're having fun. We'll go ahead and let me double check here real quick just to make sure. Yep, we've got them all done. So we'll be ready for a fresh board for our next dark show. Let's go ahead and shamelessly promote some stuff, Rex. So tell us what you have going on for your show on Sunday.
I didn't even thought of Sunday. I think we're doing leftovers because we only got through about half of last week's show.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you had something planned for Easter or not, but leftovers is good, especially because, well, last week's show, I mean, it was such a great show that it'll on be another good one. And don't you have a contest running for wrong place, right time, or something like?
Yeah, we've moved that a couple of times because it was in need of some voices. So we hit on a couple of other things in the moment.
Okay. Yep, well, hopefully that'll get some rights because that is a fun song. You know, I think it would be fun to see people do some parodies to it or just whatever it inspires. Now, we have Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company, and at 10 p.m. tonight, Eastern U.S. time. Then Saturday, 12:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time, is Part Sinner, Part Saint, Dents of the Past. Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, is Poetress Luna and myself. With myths and legends, and these myths and legends are, what are they? Arthur Rackham illustrations. So make sure to check out that topic board. Oh, yeah, for all shows, check out the topic boards, check out the contest. Poetry readers and commenters are always welcome. Monday is Louie Wildove, who usually has a quote prompt and open poetry. Hers is at 8:30 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Tuesday, 12:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time is our After Midnight Show, Rex. And we have carryovers, plus I am running a contest with quotes from the movie Natural Born Killers. It's not getting a lot, but that's okay. I think we're going to end up with enough. And we have MK is running a contest for Twisted Tuesdays with artwork from Euro Erickson. Highly recommend checking that out. I am running a contest for Wednesday featuring the entire poem plus lines picked out from the poem I Sing the Body Electric by Walt Whitman. And then for next week's Thursday show at 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time is, what is it that a Fabian Dexter do? Oh, yeah, Double Helix. I'm not sure of their topic, but one of the two of them is running the contest, and I'm sure it's going to be something thought-provoking. And then 12:30 a.m. on Friday next week will be Break On Through, and I started a contest for that one, which so far didn't have a lot of rights, but I'm sure something will be happening. I find it really, it's a from Fuller, R. Buckminster Fuller, and the Black Mountain College Supine Dome Project. I actually find it really intriguing, and I'm hoping people will check it out. All right, well, I have to say that, well, I have enjoyed tonight's show because I always enjoy hanging out with you, Rex. You have great comments, and thank you for being here. I hope you have a wonderful Easter. I hope you had a happy birthday. And thank you for being a wonderful co-host. Thank you to everybody who wrote for the show, who is calling, and who's listening now or will be listening later. We appreciate you all. And Rex, did you have anything you'd like to say?
Nope. I'm good in the room, and it's got about 30 seconds to go.
Yep. Thank you. All right. Well, have a good night.
All right. Good night.